This is The Topic is Trek, episode 56 for Friday, December 20th, 2019. Coming up in this episode, we say a few goodbyes, but then we get animated and look forward to the future. All that right now on The Topic is Trek. We have 2020 visions. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. I'm always afraid if I go bum 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 when the music is finishing, because due to Skype, that could have happened like 30 seconds ago for all I know. Well, hello everyone. I'm Clinton, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts, and beaming in to join me from somewhere in the galaxy, first of all, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey, that transporter is like a Christmas tree, for crying out loud.
He's supposed to have that third leg and the fifth arm. Well, anyway, we'll discuss
where
that
the turrets came from.
Oh, I understand now.
What we got back wasn't human.
And also, the disembodied voice is here, so presumably the body is someplace as well. Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Thank you, Decca Unit.
Yes, and it was just the 40th anniversary of Star Trek The Motion Picture. How did you guys celebrate 40 years?
I did watch my director's edition the other night. I saw you post a picture of it, and I watched it as well.
Yep.
I wore my Star Trek pajamas to a pajama party.
Ah.
Hey, and those pajamas, they look like Kirk's outfit in the motion picture.
Well, that's what they were wearing, right? They were wearing pajamas, weren't they?
Pretty much.
We also have official word that we are now one big happy family again. Viacom CBS is a thing.
Yes.
And some late breaking news I just want to bring to people to get the story straight here is that Michael Chabon will not return as showrunner should there be a second season of Star Trek Picard. Now, this is late breaking news, and it's got some people confused. First of all, there's not necessarily a second season confirmed yet of Picard. So that hasn't happened, but should it happen, he will stay on as executive producer. And as we were discussing in the pre-show, that pretty much means his name is attached to it at that point, but he'll be working on developing a Showtime series called The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And it's going to be.
I got that book.
Right. And he is the author of the book, and he is this is part of a development deal with CBS TV Studios. So it's not leaving the CBS family, but he is producing this for Showtime. So that's
why his name kept sounding familiar. I never did put the two together.
His name sounds really familiar to me. I keep thinking of that Hanna-Barbera cartoon horse character. It's me, El Chabon. El Chabon.
I don't think it's the same. No,
because of this news, I will tell you one thing, even though we don't, you know, we know a little bit about Picard now, but not much, but at least it doesn't sound like they wrote it as like a one-off season and expected that, Picard to ride off in the sunset.
Well, remember now, it could be a misdirect, you know, this thing about, sure. Well, if there's a second season, you know, he'd stay on and do this, because they don't want to say it's a one-shot deal. Who knows?
Well, I'm a little hopeful that it sounds like it could be more than, they didn't write it with just one season in mind and calling it good is what I'm getting at. But maybe, you might be right.
Right. All right. Well, that is some of the late-breaking news, but right now we're going to move on to a new introduction for our subspace chatter. Isn't that right, Charlie?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Well, we do, Charlie, but we have some sad news regarding Charlie, or should I say the actor, and Craig is going to tell us about that.
That's right. Robert Walker Jr., best known for playing Charlie X, who you just heard a moment ago, in the classic Star Trek episode of the same name, passed away on December 5th at the age of 79.
79.
Yeah.
I think he was a little older than the teenage youngster he was portraying in. He had like a Michael J. Fox look to him at then.
What do you mean?
Well, if he was 79, that means he was born.
Well, I think the next thing that Craig is going to read might give us, enlighten us on that.
Yeah. Oh, do tell,
Craig.
Thank
you for giving me on. Yeah. Nice setup. Let's put that starship back on the rails. Walker was 26 when he played the role of the angst-ridden 17-year-old Charlie.
I rest my case.
Yeah. So, yeah, Michael J. Fox, I think, was a little older than his character on Family Ties. Anyway, his performance in this episode, penned by DC Fontana, is considered one of the most memorable of the TOS Trek series. Walker's movie credits include lead role in 1964's Ensign Pulver and in 1969's Young Billy Young, where he portrayed a hot-headed outlaw finds a mentor in Robert Mitchum. That same year, Walker also made an appearance in the milestone counterculture epic Easy Rider, which I did not remember that, but I had to go look for pictures. It's pretty amazing to see him in there. On television, his career has spanned 20 years.
Nice.
And has many credits include Route 66, Ben Casey, Combat. I had to do that because of the exclamation point. Bonanza, The Time Tunnel, The $6 Million Man, Quincy, M.E., Charlie Daniels.
Daniels? What?
I'm sorry.
No.
Charlie's Angels, which is funny because his main character was Charlie in Star Trek. Columbo, Chips, L.A. Law, and Murder, She Wrote. I forgot. Quincy's supposed to be Quincy M.E.
Medical Examiner. See,
I always
called
it Quincy. I forgot about the M.E. part. So anyway, and Murder, She Wrote. Walker survived by his wife, Dawn. Their seven children, Michelle, David, Charlie, Jordan, Colette, Henry, and Emily.
He had a son named Charlie.
And, and five grandchildren.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting to note that he was Charlie X. In the episode Charlie X, mm-hmm. He was Ensign Pulver in Ensign Pulver, and he was Young Billy Young in Young Billy Young.
He's always the subject matter of his whatever he's in.
He was not Quincy M.E. in Quincy.
No, he was not, and he was not Charlie's Angels either. So it just
he was Charlie.
He was Charlie, and those were his angels.
Oh, I see.
Actually, it's funny. You go look at some of the old pictures of him. You can see it. You can see him. Obviously, he's younger, or it's a little different because some are black and white. But you can tell where he's at in this picture. That's pretty cool. See some of the older photos of him.
Yeah, and the photo of him that was in one of the biographies, a very recent photo. He was still very recognizable. He was wearing a beard, but I think if you mm-hmm. shaved off that beard, you would still really be able to recognize him quite easily.
Oh yeah.
So I think he kept that baby face throughout his life.
Yeah. Well, that's good. We can all hope, but we can do that too.
Indeed.
Look at Chuck.
Well, moving on. we have a theme for subspace chatter because my story is that Dorothy Catherine Fontana, better known to fans of Star Trek as DC Fontana, passed away on December 2nd after a short illness, and she was 80. I was interested in writing. Fontana began her career as a secretary to various entertainment industry executives, including Samuel A. Peebles, who would later write the second Star Trek pilot, the pilot of the Star Trek animated series, and a treatment for Star Trek II.
That's where I know his name from.
Fontana pitched a story idea to Peebles, and it turned out to be her first sell. She followed Peebles to the production of The Lieutenant, which we know was Gene Roddenberry's first project. Here she met Roddenberry when filming wrapped on that series. Roddenberry slid a document across the desk towards Fontana and asked what she thought of it. The document was the original network pitch for Star Trek.
The document was the Constitution of the United States.
She goes, this sucks. Threw it back at him.
Yeah. Epop Nista out of this.
No. That's later on. It was around that time, though, that Fontana had some of her stories rejected from other TV series due to gender bias. She changed her screen credit from Dorothy C. Fontana to D.C. Fontana to get her work in front of producers who were prone to not take female writers seriously.
Stupid 60s.
It's amazing, actually.
But, and that's, so if you're wondering why was she always D.C., and that's why. Mm-hmm. While submitting pitches to other shows, Fontana focused the majority of her attention on Star Trek. She was still a secretary when Gene Roddenberry asked her to write an episode. Charlie X was the second episode of the show to air on television, and I think we can all see the connection there with our previous story. Fontana penned many notable episodes such as Tomorrow Is Yesterday, This Side of Paradise, and Journey to Babel. Roddenberry noticed Fontana had a unique understanding of Star Trek and promoted her to story editor. She juggled the responsibilities of the position while still writing episodes. It was extremely rare for a woman to have a title such as story editor in the mid-60s. Fontana fleshed out such much of the Vulcan race's history and added a lot to Mr. Spock's background.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She would return to Star Trek a few more times over the years, writing the animated series episode Yesteryear, which again centered Spock. On Spock.
Yep.
Co-writing the pilot for Star Trek The Next Generation, as well as an episode of Deep Space Nine. Outside of the traditional TV series, Fontana co-wrote the stories for the video games Star Trek Bridge Commander Video Simulator, featuring the voices of Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner, Star Trek Tactical Assault, featuring the voice of William Shatner, and Star Trek Legacy, featuring the voices of all five of the Star Trek TV captains at the time.
Mm.
She also wrote the script for the Chekhov-centric To Serve All My Days episode of the fan film series Star Trek The New Voyages.
Cool.
Fontana's other script writing credits included scripts for, and I didn't name them all here, but just to give an idea, she didn't just write Star Trek, scripts for The Big Valley, Here Come the Brides, Bonanza, The $6 Million Man, Land of the Lost, Kung Fu, The Streets of San Francisco, The Waltons, Dallas, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, War of the Worlds, Babylon 5, Reboot, and Earth, Final Conflict.
Of which I've almost watched every one of those episodes on every one of those series.
And that was about half of the stuff I could find.
Crazy.
Yeah, half.
She also went on to teach script writing, which I failed to list that in the bio here. Sorry about that. But it was her lasting impact on Star Trek that we will always remember.
Yeah.
So a tip of the hat to DC. I don't think I ever got a chance to meet her. She might have been at some of the early New York conventions. I don't recall that, but it would have been great to, you know, just pick her brain about her thoughts on Trek.
Mm-hmm. Larry Nemechek had a very nice picture of her on Facebook too, on the Roddenberry Files. I'm drawing a blank. What's the name of his podcast? Oh, he's going to kill me. The Trek Files. Yes.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/The Trek Files.
There you go.
Actually, I thought it was pretty forward thinking of her, but the way she changed your name, I thought that was fascinating. To be honest with you, I may have heard it a long time ago, but I didn't think about it until recently when she passed away and I was reading about her. I was like, oh, I didn't realize that she had changed her name because of that. Or she went by her initials because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a fairly common thing that writers would, you know, the female writers would do just to, mm-hmm. you know, get that. The key thing is to get that script in front of the editor or the showrunner or whoever you're trying to, you know, whether it's for publication or for television or movies. After they've already thought the idea was great and you meet them in person, it's like, well, what are you going to do? There you go.
Fired. Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible that they had to go through all that, though.
Yeah. Hopefully we're on to better days at this point. And for our last story, which is another sad one, sorry, we will. I promise after this, we'll be discussing other things. But this one also hits home, very close to home for the three of us, because we just were on a voyage with this gentleman earlier this year. So, Chuck, do you want to take this one away?
Yes. René Auberjonois, prolific actor, best known to Star Trek fans as Odo on Deep Space Nine, passed away on December 8th due to metastatic lung cancer. He was 79 years old. Wow, a lot of these people are reaching about the same age.
Mm-hmm.
René Marie Marat Aubergenois was the son of Fernand Aubergenois, a Swiss-born foreign correspondent. I hope I'm at least, I'm trying these names. Please forgive me. Yeah. A foreign correspondent to the U.S. newspapers and the grandson of a Swiss post-impressionist painter, also named René Aubergenois. Hmm. After graduating in 1962 from Pittsburgh's Carnegie Institute of Technology, now Carnegie Mellon, Mr. Aubergenois hopped around the country joining theater companies, eventually landing three roles on Broadway in 1968, including as the fool in the long-running version of King Lear. The following year, he played Sebastian Bay opposite Katharine Hepburn in Coco, a play on the life of designer Coco Chanel that earned him a Tony for Best Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical. He later received Tony nomination for 1973's The Good Doctor, 1984's Big River, and 1989's City Angels. But it was his work on screen that brought him the widest exposure. For film fans in the 1970s, Aubergenois was Father John Mulcahy, the military chaplain, in the motion picture of MASH. How many people remembered that?
I did.
Not many of the characters came over from the movie to the show.
No, that's true.
That's true.
Except Gary Berghoff.
Right.
For sitcom watchers of the 1980s, he was Clayton Runnymede Endicott III, a hopelessly highbrow chief of staff at the governor's mansion on Benson. And for sci-fi fans of the 1990s and convention goers ever since, he was Odo, the shape-shifting changeling. Is that redundant? And yeah, head maybe. Of space station security on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Much of his later career was spent doing voiceovers for animation, most memorably as the French chef who sings the love song to fish killing. Oh, I'm not good with my French, but let's try Le Poisson, maybe, in Disney's The Little Mermaid. Mr. Aubergenois was also a regular on the ABC law firm dramedy Boston Legal from 2004 to 2008. This series that also starred The Shat.
Yes.
Late in his career, yes. Aubergenois worked with independent filmmakers, including Kelly Reichardt, for whom he appeared as, he appeared in Certain Women, 2016, and First Cow in 2019, his final role. He's survived by his wife of 56 years. Oh, God bless him. Judith, two children, two sisters, and three grandchildren.
You know, it's sad. I was just watching, like, last Sunday when all the news started coming out about this. I'd been kind of binge watching all afternoon DS9 as I did some other things.
Stop watching DS9, Craig. You're just bad juju on that whole crew.
Yeah. So anyway, I was reading it after I've been binging. And I was like, whoa, that was kind of weird. I was just like watching him like 2 minutes ago. Which I know everybody else does, but
it will live on eternal.
Yes.
Yes. And, it was really fun to get a chance to meet him on the cruise.
And to be his mic stand.
Yes. His human mic stand.
That was a human mic stand for, I was on stage. I can say I was on stage with René Aubergenois.
Yeah. Got a picture of it. I ran into him and his son. You know, we were doing the scavenger hunt on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew there was something in that shop. So went in and I turned the corner and there was him and his son and they were signing autographs. I was like, oh, actually I just skipped the whole front of the line. I didn't get an autograph. I just like, oh, and they said, I'm sorry. Can I help you? I was like, actually, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. Once I realized I was standing in front of everybody, it was in line.
Yeah, they were really nice about it. Renee, can you just give me a clue of, you know, where I'm supposed to go from here? And then I'll be on my way, you know?
Yeah. Hey, you can help me put the paper down. Where's the... Yeah. Anyway, they were very nice about it. But.
And I, out of curiosity, since I was going down this rabbit hole, I said, you know, I know we've lost other people connected with Star Trek. So I went to our trusted source, Memory Alpha, and there were 27 listings, two of which had two people's names. So 29 people in various ways connected with Star Trek who we lost this year, at least so far. Some of them we've talked about, and you've better known that Michael J. Pollard passed away, and Vonda McIntyre, and of course, Aaron Eisenberg. But we have an extended list in the show notes here for episode 56 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Sorry, a little slow.
That's okay. I kind of came at you fast with that one. And you can see some of these other people that I'm surprised in a way, some of the people that from the original series who just passed away this year. And you just tend to forget that, you know, what age were some of those people at the time? You know, Robert Walker was 27 at the time. Some of these people, I thought, I swear that the person was an old person when they were on Star Trek, but clearly not.
Well, you know, it's like my dad said, you know, he's 73 now. It's like, you know, 80 doesn't seem that old.
Yeah. And when you're a kid, though, you know, if it's a grown up, you think they've got to be in their 30s, their 40s, you know, maybe their 50s, because they're a grown up. Right. And some of these people were playing parts where they were, you know, significant members of Starfleet or that type of thing. And so, well, they must be like 60 years old already. Well, they, you know, they were far from it at that point. But yeah, somebody was mentioning that, you know, we're going to see an acceleration of some of these TOS people at this point. So cherish them while they're here and don't forget them when they're gone.
That's true.
Okay, well, we're not going to get a chance to discuss a lot of other news because we have a lot else to cover in this episode. So if you go over to the show notes for, again, for episode 56 over at thetopicistrek.com, there'll be 21 more stories that we did not have a chance to cover, which shows you a lot of news has been going on in the world of Star Trek, and you can find out about all the different things happening.
You can't swing a dead targ without hitting a story.
Well, maybe you could, but I don't know.
Maybe I should have said,
there goes.
That's a bit harder to do. They're much bigger, so yes. All right. Well, let's come back from our main mission by pressing a button.
Hey, that's the wrong sequence.
Okay, fine.
That's better.
And to head out on our main mission with an appropriate effect. Ooh, that actually was an appropriate effect.
Wow. We're finally getting our ducks in a row.
I'm shocked.
Well oiled.
Yes. Smooth as sandpaper. All right. Now, on our main mission, we have not one but two things to talk about this episode because we got not one but two short treks that just came out, and they are both animated short treks. And they have nothing to do with the animated series that's going to be coming out on CBS All Access or the animated series that's going to be coming out on Nickelodeon.
I have to leave now because I didn't see them.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And they both do not relate to each other as well.
That's true. The first one we have is Ephraim and Dot, which was written by Chris Silvestri and Anthony Marinville. It stars the voices of Kirk Thatcher. Now, as soon as I saw that name on the screen, that leapt right out at me. Anyone? Kirk Thatcher?
Married to Margaret Thatcher?
No.
Yeah, and he's a voice actor. Kirk Thatcher. No.
I want you to picture a bus in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's the punker that got knocked out.
Yeah.
With the boombox. Right.
Yes. He plays the part of the narrator, and Jeanette Goldstein plays the part of the computer voice in this. And it's directed by Michael, and Michael has the pronunciation of his name. I think it's
It's not
Giancino. It's completely different than that. But you know who I'm talking about. So
Pinocchio.
He also. I was trying to memorize it and I forgot. And I don't want to blow it. So
it's like It's like our friend Grant Pachoco.
Yes.
That one, I've put a G in front of it.
I'm going to say Gaichino, but I think that is also incorrect. Anyway, he also, that name should sound familiar as well, because he has done the music for the Kelvin Timeline Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, not only did he direct this short, but he also composed the music for it.
Oh, I saw his name for the music. I didn't pay attention to the director. Okay.
Directorial. No one pays the attention to the director, even especially the actors. The short synopsis of this short trek is Ephraim, a humble tardigrade, is flying through the mycelial network when an unexpected encounter takes her on a bewildering adventure through space. Now, that is true, and bewildering is only half the story here. Do we need to hit the spoiler alert? Because I think we're about to really get into that territory.
Yeah, let's do it.
Where'd it go? There it is.
Spoiler alert.
I have too many red buttons on this soundboard.
You should have some Milton Berle's instead. But I want to tell you, okay, that's a joke for all you old people out there. There you go.
Digging deep for that one.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, in this, it's true that the tardigrade is attempting to lay her eggs, which apparently are able to stay dormant for several years, and several years is important, believe me, in this case. She lays the eggs in the warp core of the Enterprise.
Oh, why not? Because what could be a better place to, you know, incubate your eggs?
Very warm in there. Unfortunately,
that's what I was thinking.
Unfortunately, one of the robots, the repair robots that we saw in the, I think it was just like the next to last episode of Star Trek Discovery that were on the Enterprise. They kind of are human-ish looking, but they have they don't have any legs, just a torso and arms and a head with a semi face to it. Well, it's much more animated, no pun intended, in this. And the bot, a Dot, pushes the tardigrade out. And of course, the tardigrade is panicked to get back into the ship at that point because the eggs are there. Mm-hmm. And the ship is the Enterprise. And we go through essentially the history of the Enterprise at this point as the eggs lay dormant there in the warp core. We see a scene from Space Seed, and this is all animated. So we see Space Seed, we see Tribbles, we see Sulu confronting crew members with a sword from the Naked Time. We see the giant green hand.
It's the Enterprise's greatest hits.
Yeah.
I was going to say, never the dull moments that nobody would remember.
It passes through the Doomsday Machine. It gets caught in the Tholian web. Mm-hmm. We see it encounter the flying Abe Lincoln in space.
Yeah.
Then a little bit of time passes, and this is where I think, I'm going to say this, that we get things get weird because that's redundant at this point. But so we then suddenly find ourselves in the Wrath of Khan. The Enterprise, which has now been refit, now has the Reliant coming towards it, being fired upon. And then we jump again to the explosion in Star Trek: The Search for Spock, where the Enterprise is destroyed. Now, my question there is, so in all that time in the refit, when they completely redid engineering and the warp core and everything,
replaced the core.
Yeah,
someone just ignore that part of the ship. It's like spider eggs nests. They're just so there.
What are we doing in here? We're just rehanging the sheetrock.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's cardboard panels. Deal with it.
I'm gonna put this tall thing in here, and you know that it'll be it's completely different. Scotty will think it's a whole new place. It's amazing.
Forced perspective.
Yeah. And what did you think about this one, Clinton?
I liked it. I mean, it was a silly story. There was sent a tweet to Michael saying that I liked it. It had a lot of Looney Tunes elements to it. Very early on in the piece, there's a chase through the Enterprise, and very much that kind of like stretch and squash, and also, you know, going through piping and all sorts of things going on in it. Yeah. Pretty much. If they didn't have that sound effect, they came close to it.
And you see Fred Flintstone's feet come out of the bottom of the Enterprise.
That's And we also got all the musical cues in there as well. I mean, we had the you know, all sorts of things, silliness going on there. So to me, it was a fun story. Just, you know, turn the higher brain functions off and just have a good time with it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, except for it got a little cutesy for me to believe in in the framework it was in, until I was like, okay, I just got back up a couple steps and I enjoyed it. You know, mentally, I was like, okay, back up a little bit. And like you said, and I liked it. But yeah, I was like, how long were those eggs supposed to be in there?
That's why, like I said, they made that point at the beginning that can remain this way for quite a long time. And go, that is quite a long time.
How big are the eggs?
The eggs are about the size of a football, would you say?
And no maybe. One ever noticed. How many did she lay?
There was probably a dozen or so.
You think saw anything.
Hey, you think Scotty was on top of stuff, but apparently he wasn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, it was several, you know, that it was in the section where you have the, in classic Trek, the red section at the back of engineering with the piping that's going lengthwise.
Yeah, behind the mesh.
The mesh. So it was on a beam that was one of the sides of that. So it was clearly tucked away and no one could see without going in there. And who wants to go in there? That's radiation and stuff inside there. Right.
Okay. I can sympathize with that argument because I do have several computers/keyboards that are over 40 years old that haven't been cleaned.
See, you might have tardigrades today. You want to check those over.
I'm waiting for him to hatch.
Chuck can clone a younger version of himself. He's got the skin cells in the
keyboard. You saw what came out of that K-Pro keyboard, Craig.
Oh, yes. I've seen what comes out of any keyboard. Ugh, that's nasty. But I did enjoy it. The robot, I was trying to place him in my head because I was like, I don't remember. I never saw any cleaning or repairing robots walk around the Enterprise. And I was like, whatever. It was fun. Right. Hey, what really got me, though, is not necessarily the egg and the tardigrade and stuff, but when they started showing the scenes that you were just talking about, I was like, oh, that's that. Oh, that's that. You know, that's that. And I got to tell you, the Doomsday Machine as a kid, not scared me, but it kind of got to me a little bit. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
It looked like a big space turd.
Well, I was thinking like a cornucopia.
And that wouldn't be scary? Come on.
A stone carrot? It's like, how is that?
Yeah.
No, they couldn't get,
they were getting sucked into it. I was like, I don't know. It bugged me a little bit when I was a kid. Okay, sue me.
Okay. And forever, he'll never, ever, 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 ever eat stone parsnips.
I am just saying, Chuck, if it's what you thought it was, then there had to be something that made that, and that would scare me as well. So,
yeah. Who's leaving just these about big that. Poos around space?
They're flying around Uranus, and come on.
Hey, ho, hey now. Hey now.
Anyway, okay, fine. Beat up on me about it. I'm just saying.
Oh, we will.
I was, 10? You know, I don't know.
Whereas a giant Abe Lincoln in space really got to me. I don't know. It's just kind of.
The what?
Giant Abe Lincoln in space. You know?
Took him years to go to the Lincoln Memorial without freaking out.
Oh, my green hand. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, they really like to go back to that green hand. The green hand was also in one of the end credits of one of the Kelvin Timeline movies. I forget which one.
Was it the second one? I remember at the end watching the credits, because I liked the way they did the credits where the planets would kind of flip around and they would show them for a second. And I was watching that and I remember seeing the green hand for a second. I was like, whoa, did I just see that?
Suddenly the lyrics of Violent Femmes' Blister in the Sun is starting to make sense.
But not only did we get that short trek, we also got a second one, completely different style. This one is connected to Star Trek Discovery, though, and it's entitled The Girl Who Made the Stars, written by Brandon Schultz and starring the voices of Kendrick Green, who also played Michael Burnham the father, Michael Burnham, going by the name of Mike Burnham in the season of Discovery, who, by the way, is also Sonequa's husband. And
wait,
Kiri...
her husband plays her dad?
Yes.
Okay.
But remember, they're flashbacks.
Timey-wimey.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
And Kiri McAlpin, who plays young Michael Burnham, and directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. And I should get to knowing Olatunde's name as well, because we keep running across that, because he's very much involved with these new iterations of Trek. The synopsis is, when a lightning storm in space scares young Michael Burnham, her father aims to ease her fears with a mythical story about a brave little girl who faced her own fears head on. Now, when I watched this one, so the framing story is that young Michael is afraid of this noise, and she's afraid to have the lights off in her room to go to sleep. Even they're on a space platform, and so it's just her mother and her father there. And to help ease her, the father tells this story about something that happened in long ago Africa, at the beginning of the dawn of man in Africa. The weird thing is, though, that when that story was referenced at the beginning of season two of Star Trek Discovery, as the girl who made the stars and Burnham is telling the story, I went and I did some research on it. Mm-hmm. And now I was very interested then to see, well, how are they going to be telling this story in the short? And they really don't use, much of the actual story. They kind of use it as a jumping off point. This story, in this telling in the short treks, we have an alien involved in it. And in the original folktale, there is no alien involved. But the base story is still the same, where the people in this tribe do not travel outside of their valley because there are no stars and night comes. And they're afraid to leave where they are. And if they travel someplace, well, they couldn't get back in there and back in a day and make any difference, so that they never go anyplace. And in this story, it's talking about, in this telling of it, that since they're in the same space and they're trying to farm after X number of years, obviously the soil has just given everything it's got. And so they need to move somehow, but they can't, because they also believe that there's a demon who lives in the dark. And so you can't travel at nighttime.
A devil in the dark?
Yes, essentially. It's a snake, though, in this case.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So in the original story, she takes embers from a fire and tosses them into the sky and makes the stars. And there's also some bits of food that gets thrown there, and the spoiled food makes the red stars in the sky, and the fresh food makes the white stars, and different variants on that story. So I thought it was interesting, because to me, and I was discussing this with my wife Bonnie, that I almost felt like it made the girl less the captain of her own destiny in some ways, because she kind of got the inspiration to do this thing from this alien that shows up. And I felt like, well, it's not really her idea then.
It's like musicians. She was influenced by the other artist.
Yeah. And the story concludes with her becoming, you know, the queen of the tribe and actually going out. The last frame of it is her attempting to slaughter the snake with a bow and arrow. So I can understand aspects of it, but I don't know, not being familiar with the story, what did you think of with the fairy tale? What did you think of the episode?
Well, not being familiar with the story, the original story, as you said, but watching the episode, I quite enjoyed it. And, you know, her as a little girl, you know, being the one that put this put the light in the sky, so, you know, to kind of overcome everything. I thought it was kind of neat. I liked it. And I thought the animation was great.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little weird that she had a plushy tardigrade. It's a little on the nose, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. Was it a I was looking at it the second time through because I that was my first thought, and then I forgot to really pay attention the second time. Was it a tardigrade? I couldn't tell.
It sure did look like it. I'll put it that way. I have to go back and look at myself, but I think it was. So I was like, okay. I just kind of let that slide. But other than that, I enjoyed the story. I thought the animation was great. I liked the serpent thing. And so, yeah, I thought it was great.
Apparently, this was also one of the ideas pitched for this was to have this be the very end of season two of Discovery, to kind of bookend what Burnham is saying in the first episode, to have that in, as the last part. But too much else was going on, and just it didn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a completely different animation style than the first short trek, which was very cartoonish looking. Matter of fact, when the Enterprise shows up, although it's the refit kind of Enterprise that we see in Discovery, it's still, you almost had that Filmation 70s, the animated series kind of look to mm-hmm. things. But this one was more lifelike, had much higher production values in that regards. The opening shot, when this fairy tale starts to open up, you see lots of animals roaming in the scene before we get to the village. Much more complex piece. And again, neither of these really are reflective of the type of animation we're going to see in either of the two series that are coming out.
Those look different. The screenshots we've seen.
Now we got one additional thing, very, very short, very, very short, which was a quick glimpse of the last short trek of this coming, of this season anyway, of short treks. And that's for Children of Mars, which will be on January 9th. And that is a prequel tie-in to Star Trek Picard. You couldn't really tell much of this. It looked like it was taking place at a girls' school, but one of the girls was an alien.
Right.
And the girls, like one of them was being very mean to the other one. And the wording on screen is something like, you know, how could two people so different?
It's a takeoff of Saved by the Bell called Saved by the Phaser.
Ah.
Saved by the Klaxon.
Yeah, exactly. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Exactly. There it is right there.
Da, 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 da. Saved by the Klaxon. Yeah, that's it.
Screech will be played
by no Screech. Nope, there'll be no Screech. There'll be no Screech in this whatsoever, believe me.
Screech is a Klingon in this one.
There's nothing really to give us any clue as to the context of what's going on here, from at least from the clips that we saw. You know, how it ties in with Picard, how it ties in with anything we've read in the one issue of the comic that's come out so far, and the next one is due out this coming week, I believe. So I didn't know quite what to make of that, other than intriguing. Let's find out more. Oh, we have to wait until January for that.
Hey, well, you know what? That's not that far away.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, whoa, January is just next month and Picard will be showing up. So cool. Anyway.
Yes, and if you're the lucky winner of a contest that CBS All Access is running, you can be at the premiere of Star Trek Picard, which I believe is the weekend before it comes out.
Ooh.
And I know someone who is going to one of those previews, but I've got a feeling that they'll be told, and you can't say anything until it comes out, so I don't expect to really hear anything.
We're gonna rub elbows with Patrick Stewart.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, a minute. Why do people say that? Because it'd be kind of awkward to rub elbows together.
It's when you're in a crowd, Greg. You have no choice. You're in a subway. You're rubbing elbows with somebody.
So you're saying meeting celebrities is kind of like meeting somebody on a subway? It's kind of like, I don't know, what's that
I don't
mean?
Know why I was just thinking of that. You know, rubbing elbows with somebody, that's kind of awkward. You got to turn your arm.
Never mind. Let it go. Let it go.
All right. And I would ask you, Chuck, for your thoughts on these two animated shorts, but you haven't seen them yet.
My travel schedule has been crazy and I haven't had a chance to catch up. So I am behind. Well, I made a to-do for this week to watch them.
All right. Very good. And since we've obviously not spoiled either of them for you,
not in the least.
You should be fine.
I think you'll still enjoy them, though. They're not very long. So.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's like 20 minutes for both of them. It's pretty good.
All right. And that ends our main mission. So we'll press the appropriate button or make the appropriate sound effect.
That's good enough. Fairly appropriate.
Sure. And then we're going to go out on a warp speed round table and roll the dice and see what sound effect
Oh, boy. Something's coming through.
Oh, no. It's forming.
It's not quite human.
That was me from earlier. This stupid Christmas tree with transporter.
That can't be good.
Wow.
All right,
we're getting all the noise now. All right.
Static at all.
Last time around, we asked, what item would you most like to bid on in the upcoming auction for Star Trek memorabilia? But rather than give another normal question for a Warp Speed Roundtable, we're going to do something for the first time ever on this show, and that is to review predictions that we made last year for 2019 and see how we did. Then we're going to make predictions for 2020. Oh, yes, we are going to do that.
On this auspicious occasion, let the horn of eternity cut a thunderous blast.
Just had to hear Craig laugh.
I love that.
That all right.
You built it up really well, Clip Clinton. I could not resist.
Thank you. Thank you. I try. I'm always trying on this show. But anyway, let's look first at how we did last time on our predictions for 2019. I have down here first that Clinton and Craig both predicted, with agreement from Chuck, that there will be word that production on Star Trek IV is back on and that it will be set in the Kelvin timeline. We will not know whether or not it is the last film in the Kelvin timeline, since that's mostly driven by box office. And on that one, we were correct.
Ding, ding. Ding.
On and off.
Where's
again.
The bell? Yeah.
We were on again, off again. No, I think in lieu of getting one right, you don't get the bell. You get... Come on, switch here. You get there.
Ooh. There you go.
Hey, now let's go on to the to the next one. Craig predicted Chris Pine will not be returning as Kirk. Now, understand this was not necessarily serious on this one, but Chris Pine will not be returning as Kirk. As a result, all the other actors in Hollywood named Chris would take turns being Captain Kirk in the new film. He said we would see actors such as Chris Hemsworth, Chris Pratt, Chris Evans, Chris Walken, Chris Rock, and even Chris Elliott sitting in the captain's chair.
And Chris Farley.
Yeah.
That's
a hard one. Okay.
You know what? I would love to see him as Captain Kirk. I know it's not going to happen, obviously, but I would love that.
Chris Farley?
Yes. Well, I guess it'd be kind of like watching Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. And... even though he was joking, sadly, he appears to be incorrect on that one.
I could just see his doing his Tommy Boy thing. Fat man in a little chair.
Yeah.
The Enterprise parked in a van. Down by the... Anyway. Okay.
Down by the river on Vulcan.
Then Craig predicted, and Chuck agreed, we will get another CBS All Access show announcement. Now, at the time... we had recorded the episode, only Picard had been announced.
When did they announce Section 31? I guess that was before Picard, wasn't it?
And so, correct!
Yay.
Chuck predicted that we would get more news out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. And although it's been a little sparse the past couple of episodes, we did indeed so correct! Craig predicted we will see a version of Data on Picard, but possibly not Brent Spiner. Perhaps his memory will be loaded into another android body. Well, correct, but with the caveat that it is actually Brent doing Data.
Right.
However, we did not predict any of the other Trek actors' appearances in Picard.
And almost all of them are.
Right. We made jokes about people wanting to be on it. Little did we know that half of those people actually would end up being on it.
At least half.
And even people that we hadn't even thought to mention were going to be on it. All right. So we did, I don't know, what is it, about 50-50 last year, which isn't bad. Maybe a little bit better than that. I would say maybe 60-40 last year, which is pretty good.
10W-40.
So hopefully that bodes well for our predictions for this year. And I am going to start off with my prediction, and then we're going to do a round robin and see what other people are predicting. And if yours is the same as somebody else's, then feel free to chime in on that and say, hey, me too. I got bingo. All right. My first prediction is that we will get word on a Pike Star Trek series, but with no air date.
I had that down. Yep. I'm totally for that.
Yeah. I think we're all three in agreement on that one.
Right. So we're not saying that it's something that will go into production immediately in 2020.
Oh, I'm going so far as saying they will announce production. Like, we'll get to script writing. All right.
Actually, I had an announcement for a Pike Spock series will be made for a 2021.
Ooh, wow. Fast tracking that.
That's a fast. Yeah, that is fast tracking.
All right. Well, I mean, that does give them theoretically 2 years.
Looking back at our past last year's predictions, you can just call me Lieutenant Nostradamus.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, okay. All right. Okay, Nosy.
I'm calling him the M5. Something's going to go wrong sooner or later.
Okay, Nosy, let's get to one of your predictions then.
All right, me?
Yeah.
Worf will be on Picard.
Okay. I tend to agree with that. I think that
we haven't heard
correct.
Any official announcement about that yet, have we?
No, and I think that's important to note, because when I listen to this next year, I got to remember what did we not know
right
at the time.
Yeah, there's been no news about Michael Dorn. There's been rumors, but nothing solid.
I just have a feeling we're going to end up seeing somebody when I probably Worf, but we're going to see somebody else we weren't expecting on that show.
Now, would he be Worf, or would he be another relative like he was in Star Trek VI?
No, it'd be related.
Alexander
to
doesn't
Picard.
Count either, so you can't use
well,
that.
Well, Picard and Worf had a really good relationship. You know, he stood up for Worf, several times, trying to clear his name of the Empire, and you know, he stood up. They had a pretty tight relationship. That's why I think you're going to see Worf on Picard.
Okay.
So in any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
That's right. Yes.
So in season one of Picard, like not announced for season two, if they have a second season, he'll be in.
Well, if you don't see in season one, which that's what I'm saying, we'll see Worf in season one. I think you're definitely going to see him in season two.
All right. But you're going for season one. Okay. Let's move on to our first prediction from Chuck.
I'm going
to
stay on the Star Trek Picard theme and say that it will be met with great enthusiasm, but despite that, there will still be naysayers.
Have you met the internet? I mean,
oh boy.
I'm starting with the loaf route.
No kidding.
Well,
like
I'm
ankle high fruit right there.
Yeah. I'm going to piggyback on that with a slight variant for my second prediction to tie in with that, is that I'm saying that many people will not be happy with the way season one of Picard ends.
Ooh.
I have no inside information, but I've just got a feeling they're not going to be happy.
You know, I kind of thought about that too, but I didn't put that in my prediction or anything. I just thought, I mean, it can always happen. So I don't know. I thought about the same thing.
So I can't say whether it be a cliffhanger, whether there's a death, whether, you know, I don't know, but I'm
Data
just,
dies again.
You mentioned death, and that's where I'll jump in with another one of mine, that we will say goodbye to one of the beloved TNG characters on Picard.
Mm.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Picard?
Well, he is one of the beloved TNG characters.
That would make season two a lot easier.
Yeah, but really harder. Hard to justify the name at this at that point, though.
Star Trek
not
Picard.
Picard, you know. Star Trek Picard in absentia. I don't know.
Star Trek Picardless. Minus Picard. It's like Garfield without Garfield.
Yes, that's right. All right, let's move on to Second or another prediction from you, Craig, if you've got one.
All right. We will get a release date for Tarantino's Star Trek film to be released in 2023.
Okay. So so it will be in 2023 and we'll get an actual release date.
That the release date will be in 2023.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay.
Yeah, in this next year, in the year 2020, we will get a release date for Tarantino's Star Trek film and it will be released in 2023.
I was going to go along something of that lines, but I pulled that prediction, but I was going to say we will get some finally get some solid news on that next movie.
And I predict my third prediction is Quentin Tarantino will drop plans to make a Star Trek film.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll exactly be Tarantino, but we will get we will get some news on that fourth film that would say, yes, we're going forward with it. Here's what the deal is.
Well, the fourth film, actually, the fourth film, we've got word that they're going to have that one.
That was what I was talking about earlier, was that I sent an article over and it specifically said they're moving forward on the next two Star Trek movies.
Right. I just have this, my gut tells me with the other movie going forward, with the remerger of CBS and Viacom, with all the properties they have going on CBS, they can potentially tie together with stuff going on in other places, that they'll relook at Tarantino. They'll have discussions. He'll get ticked. He'll feel like he's being, you know, told what he's supposed to be doing, which is never going to work with him. Mm-hmm. And he'll just go, you know what? Never mind. So, you know, that's my prediction, is that they're going to say, nope, that one's off.
I would be severely disappointed if that happens. We've gone down this long road of hearing news about this movie and how bananas it is. I'd be severely disappointed I never saw it.
Well, keep in mind, he's already kind of sort of given hints that he's backing off the commitment to direct it. I mean, he's kind of saying he's still involved with it. Mm-hmm. But I get a feeling is some of his wording just seems to be framed like, you know, well, I'm not saying I'm directing it, but, you know, it's a story.
No, I see where you come from. I don't know. It could go either way, but no, it can't, because I made the prediction that it will be released in 2023.
That's right. So you've got two, one of us will be right. One of us will be wrong.
Yes, right.
You only have to wait a year to find out.
Well, they come back next year.
That's right.
Oh, by the way, I had a fourth prediction. Y'all have another one?
Well, I'm gonna see if Chuck has another one.
I have an ace up my sleeve that's not in the show notes yet. Patrick Stewart will get represented as Jean-Luc Picard, will get a statue somewhere.
Oh, so like the Kirk statue type of thing, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll put it in France or if they'll put it in London or if they'll.
Or somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, in the English Channel, right?
It's Le Bear, France, is where he's born at, Picard.
All right.
Interesting. All right. We will find out within the year whether or not that prediction comes true. And you said you had another one, Craig?
I do. Brace yourselves.
I'm braced.
Star Trek Quark will be coming as soon as they strike a deal.
Wow. That's a bold prediction.
Star Trek Quark.
I don't know if I believe in the title, but okay.
You know what? I could almost go for, even if it's short, a Ferengi series.
Interesting. So have you given this enough thought to say, it would be set on Deep Space Nine. It would be set someplace else.
Ooh, I'd like to see more background of Ferenginar.
Yeah, I think it could be somewhere else, and including Ferenginar or something like that. Because
Quark is the Grand Nagus presiding over. Yeah. Star Trek Acquisition.
Yeah, yeah. Watching season, I guess, really six is. Well, they've had several good Ferengi episodes, but season six they had some really standalone Ferengi episodes. Mm-hmm. And they actually fleshed them out enough where I really started liking them more, you know, the Ferengi themselves, you know, and TNG, they were just annoying and they seemed a little angry, you know.
They were supposed to be the big bad in Next Generation.
Yeah. And then they weren't, but they really weren't, sort of. And then Deep Space Nine fleshed them out a little bit more, and they're a little bit on the comical side, a little bit on the, oh, that let's make a deal, and that kind of stuff makes sense, the rules of acquisition and all that stuff. And I would love to see some Ferengi stuff going on.
More Moogie, huh?
Yeah, baby. That actually was when Quark was a female. That's, yeah, that really got me thinking.
Yeah, but what? That's, I don't
know. Don't let it go. Let it go.
Yeah, pretty much.
More sent to Hall over here.
That's right.
All right. Well, I'm out of predictions because, looking into the crystal ball too long, it's tiring. Did anyone else have anything else they want to throw into the mix?
Not at this point.
Okay. Well, that's everything we have for predictions for 2020. And that was a lot of stuff to have happen. And certainly a lot has happened this year. So I'm not putting any of it past happening in 2020. However, if you have some additional predictions you'd like to make, you know what to do. You can leave us a note over on our Facebook page at facebook.com/thetopicistrek. Or you can tweet us at thetopicistrek on Twitter. And we will include your predictions in the mix for next year. But, don't give us a prediction for 2020 in like November of 2020. I mean, got to do it really by the end of this year for next year. All right. Let's just give that. That is a stipulation on any prediction that you make. But we will find out. At this point, however, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here for 2019. We'll be coming back at you in 2020.
Yeah, I predict we'll be doing a show in January.
We will. We will indeed.
Before Picard comes out.
Yes. Yes. And we will. By that point, we might have a clip. Who knows? We'll bring in the clip if we have a clip to show.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Yes, I know. Wait a minute. That sounds so familiar. Well, you can find me and my announcer, Sir Patrick, who you just heard there. You can find my show, Comedy Forecast, at comedyforecast.com, all one word with the number 4. Also find me on Twitter with that handle, Facebook, Instagram, MeWe, all over the Trekiverse. And who speaks for you this time around, guys?
You always sound like the Guardian of Forever or something.
That's what I'm trying for.
Who speaks for you? Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, your humbleness, your honorness, your picturing the scarecrow fumbling around. You can find us over at chuckchat.com. Click on the link that says Technorama, and Craig and I do that insanity we call Technorama. Oh, my. Is it more than 15 years now? I can't remember, but it's a really long time. So
yeah.
Have fun with us.
15. Yeah, we're rolling up on 15.
Geek out with us. Science, sci-fi, fun, books, comics, games,
Nerds.
Yeah. Nerd alert. All right.
Nerds.
You should have just called it Nerdfest. It would have been easier to spell.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for all the home automation devices to understand Comedy Forecast as all one word with the number 4. Good luck on that one. Alrighty then. It's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always see here on The Topic is Trek...
Don't put on the red shirt!
Put on... Oh, wow.
Spoiler alert.
Wow.
It happens to most guys every once in a while, Chuck.
My phaser went off while I was cleaning it.
Yeah, right. Happy holidays!